Welcome to the 11th season of Heart to Heart with Anna. Our theme this season is Heart Warrior Siblings, and we have a great show for you today. Today's program is Heart Sister, Congenital Heart Defect Advocate, and Heart Mom. And our guest is Christy Gimple. Christy Gimple was born in 1984. 2 years later, her little sister Megan was born. Unlike Christy, Megan had problems with her heart. She was born with hypoplastic right heart syndrome and would need multiple surgeries to survive. Christy will be sharing with us in the first segment what it was like to have a younger sister who had a chronic illness. She'll tell us what she remembers and how the people in her life when she was a child continue to play a role in her life today. In segment two of the program, Christy will tell us how her mother taught her to be an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. And in the final segment, Christy will talk with us about how her life changed after she married her husband, Nick Gimple, and what it was like for her to get pregnant. Lastly, she'll talk to us about how having a sister with a chronic illness affected her as a parent. So welcome to Heart with Anna, Christy.
Hi, Anna. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, I'm excited to meet you, Christy. I've known your sister for a while. So let's find out how old you were when Megan had her first open heart surgery. And what do you remember from that surgery?
Well, I was about 2 years old, We were less than 2 years apart. So when she was born, she had her first surgery. She continued to have surgeries when I was about 2 years old to around 4 years old. That is the time where I have some of my first memories.
Really? You have some of your first memories from that time? Okay. What do you remember?
Some of my first memories are actually memories of Children's Hospital. Most of her, actually all of her surgeries were from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So I have very vivid memories of the hospital layout, visiting her in her hospital crib. My dad taking me to visit her. We actually have a kind of a funny family story that's always talked about where my mom reprimands my dad for letting me dress myself on some of these occasions. So I would show up to the hospital all mismatched, one purple sock, one pink sock, and a green jumper because I was allowed to dress myself before the visit. Those are actually my first childhood memories going to visit my sister. I remember what the nurse's station looked like. I can detail places in the hospital that we don't have any pictures of. So I know it's a genuine memory. My mom's always been impressed by what I can remember about the layout of the hospital at that time.
Wow. Obviously, that made a big impression on you. Do you remember if you felt scared or excited or happy or sad?
I do remember feeling really excited to go see my sister. Mm-hmm. I have a memory of not seeing her a lot. I actually remember that absence. So I know when I went to see her, I was really excited. I was also excited to see my parents because I didn't get to see my parents often during that time. I don't have a lot of sad memories, to be honest. I didn't fully understand the severity of what was happening at the time either. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't informed of the life or death situation. All I knew is that I got to go see Megan that day. Mm-hmm. I know I was really excited to see my little sister.
Oh, that's so wonderful. And I think it's cute that you dressed yourself and that maybe it wasn't perfect.
Oh, no, it definitely was nowhere near perfect.
I think that's great. I love that story. That's just so awesome. And how interesting it is that your mom would scold your dad.
Even to this day, we still talk about that.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So who were you staying with if your parents were up at the hospital with your sister?
During the time Megan was in the hospital, I stayed with different relatives and different friends. I stayed with my grandparents for a short time and then two different sets of aunts and uncles. But most of the time, I'd say the predominant amount of time that I remember, at least, I was staying with my parents' friends from church. And their names are Sherry and Jim Holdsworth. Mm-hmm. And they had two children. Their daughter is my age. She's only 7 months older than me. So we went to preschool together. Her name is Teresa. Teresa has an older brother named Jimmy, who's now Jim, but he was Jimmy when we were growing up. And I stayed with the Holdsworth family. So I lived with them. They lived very close in our neighborhood. I continued to go to the same preschool. I became a part of their family for an extended length of time. I basically was just like another little sister in that family.
Isn't that wonderful that another family took you in and just treated you like one of their own? It doesn't sound like there was any terrific interruption in your daily life, except that you were living with this other family, but they kept everything the same for you. They kept the preschool the same for you. It sounds like they kept your friends the same. So it really reduced how scary it would have been for you.
Yes, absolutely. And you really don't understand that or realize that until you're an adult with your own children. But at the time, if you think about it, I didn't change a church. I went to the same church every Sunday. I didn't change my school. I was still going to the same preschool with my best friend, Teresa, that continued this pattern and this routine. There was no interruption. I think that made a huge impact just on the fact that nothing was horrifically changed. But you don't realize that until you're older and you look back and say, wow, that really helped.
Yeah, and it really took a lot of effort. There were a lot of people who were surrounding you with love at that time. And it obviously made you feel safe and it made you feel okay to the point where, oh, I get to go see Megan today. Oh, I get to go see Mom and Dad. And it wasn't tear-filled. Instead, it was excitement-filled.
Exactly. There was a huge village of people that helped. I was very fortunate to have a family where I could stay, because at times being in a family that's struggling with someone that's medically fragile and in any situation can be really terrifying and you feel isolated. As a child, what I remember, I don't remember any isolation, which is very good. And it's definitely a more healthy way to grow up.
Absolutely. I hope your parents are listening to the program, because kudos to them. They were able to figure out a way to still make you feel safe and for you to be able to continue your life while they were attending to your very sick little sister. And I hope your adopted family or second family.
Yes.
I don't know, adopted,
I'm sure
second,
they are.
I love that.
Sherry has absolutely always been my second mom, and that's how I'll always refer to her. She is definitely a mom. And Teresa is, of course, the closest I've ever had to an older sister. So she was an instant best friend, and we're still very close to this day.
I just love that. Well, it seems very common for heart parents to have heart warrior babies and heart healthy preschoolers. I had the same situation. I've talked to multiple people this season where they were a preschooler and then a baby was born with a heart defect. So what advice would you give to parents who are in that same situation?
I think the most valuable advice I can give from the perspective of the heart healthy preschooler is you should not be worrying about how much time you dedicate to each child. I think that's a natural worry for parents. I mean, obviously your heart warrior baby is going to require an incredible amount of time and energy. I guess parents just feel like they have to spend an equal amount of time with their heart healthy preschooler, and it's not always possible to do so. I just want to tell them that it's okay. You know, we get it. And I mean that emphatically. It's really okay. We understand, and definitely as an adult, I understand that you'll never need to spend an equal amount of time during that period of time where so much attention is being paid to the child with a heart need. I feel like parents sometimes think the children are going to hold that against them or resent them. And that's just not true. It's going to be okay. Don't ever feel like you have to equal that time or spread yourself thin.
Oh my gosh. I wish you had been talking to me when Alex was in the hospital, Christy. I feel tears coming. No, truly, I feel tears in my eyes right now. You have no idea how much guilt there is. Well, you're a parent now, so you know, but I worried so much that Joey would be scared or that Joey would, you know, I think the thing that scared me the most was, what if something happened to Alex? How would I explain that to Joey? You know, especially since Joey had been the center of my universe.
I truly feel that even today, I don't remember the absence. I remember our time together, and I wish I could have been there to tell my mom, and especially my mom, but both of my parents, just kind of coach them through and say, you know, it's going to be okay. Focus on Megan. You know, you'll have the rest of your lives to focus on me and Megan. But parents don't often hear that. They think, I'm spending all this time with the child that's obviously in a fragile position, and they feel guilty about that. And I know that my mom, even to this day, still feels guilty about that. And no matter how many times I tell her, it's okay, it's fine. I don't remember feeling neglected or isolated because I wasn't. Everybody was there for me.
Texas Heart Institute were offering us a mechanical heart, and he said, no, Dad, I've had enough. Give it to someone who's worthy.
My father promised me a golden dress to twirl in. He held my hand and asked me where I wanted to go.
Whatever strife or conflict that we experienced in our long career together was always healed by humor.
Heart to Heart with Michael. Please join us every Thursday at noon Eastern as we talk with people from around the world who have experienced those most difficult moments.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect, or CHD, community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, a handbook for parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
You are listening to Heart to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart to Heart with Anna.
Before the break, Christy, you were talking with me about what it was like to be the big sister to a baby who was born with a heart defect. But let's fast forward now and talk about what it was like when you and your sister were in elementary school together.
Elementary school, for me, and I think for all children, is really the first time where you venture outside of the home for social situations. This was the first time where I really started to notice how different my sister was compared to other siblings and just compared to other children. I guess I was oblivious to how different she was before that, or maybe I just didn't care, or a combination of. But when I started attending grade school, I noticed that my classmates had a ton of questions about my sister, her scar, why she was in a stroller. And here I was, a 7-year-old kid, trying to explain CHDs to other 7-year-old kids. At first, it was embarrassing. I know it's awful to say that, but it was embarrassing for me to explain all these things to my classmates. And then it became really frustrating because obviously the other first and second graders didn't understand. And so I wanted to defend my little sister. I had a natural, innate defense mechanism that kicked in. But then I also wanted her to be normal, so I didn't have to defend her. It was a weird balance that I had to strike at a young age. But before elementary school, I really didn't realize how different she was at all. It wasn't until I had that standard of comparison.
Mm-hmm. And that's totally normal. As far as you knew, she was your little sister and everybody dealt with the same issues that you did because you had no comparison.
Right.
Because it
right.
sounds like it's just you and your sister. There were no other older siblings.
It was just me and my sister. And so other than Teresa and Jimmy, with whom I lived for the time period that my sister was in the hospital, I didn't have a lot of other comparisons or standards to see what other families looked like. And I don't think a lot of 2- and 3-year-olds do, other
right.
than within their own family. So
exactly.
Elementary school was that first time where people outside of the situation that had no idea who Megan was or what she went through started to ask questions.
Now, did your mother and father talk to you about your sister has a heart problem, or was it just obvious because there was this big scar on her chest? How
yes,
did they deal with
I
that?
Yes, there were multiple conversations that my parents had with me about my sister's heart. I remember learning at a very, very young age, and I mean preschool, kindergarten, finding out how my sister's heart worked, because I think my mom was the first one that said my sister's heart pumped blood differently than mine. So I knew at a very young age that my heart pumped blood through it in one way and Megan's did it in the reverse. And
wow.
that was kind of my go-to explanation when people asked about her scar. So it's really easy to say, my sister had heart surgery. If there was any follow-up questions as a child, I kind of had, oh, well, they changed how her blood pumps through. And usually at that point, adults are so impressed by that answer from a 5 or 6 year old that they stop asking questions. That kind of ended the conversation or turned into like a friendly nod and an, oh, okay, that's great. And so that was my go-to answer for a while there.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. That's good that they didn't expect you to know even more than that, because that actually was a lot for a little girl to know. Well, what was the event that taught you about becoming an advocate, and who was responsible for teaching you to turn your anger? Because I think it's normal to be defensive for your sister and to be angry. So who taught you how to turn that anger into advocacy?
One day, it was in elementary school, actually. I was really upset that some of my friends were asking about Megan being in the stroller. I don't think they were trying to be mean. I think it was just normal, curious kids. They said something along the lines of, your sister's 5, why is she still in a baby stroller? I got really upset. I actually remember crying to my mom about this. She suggested telling the students in my class about my sister's surgeries and her special needs. So instead of just having informal conversations with my friends that asked, actually doing a presentation to my second grade class, just telling them, you know, how Megan got winded really easily and she couldn't walk long distances, to walk the 6 or 7 blocks to and from school would be too much for her. And that's why she was in a stroller. So one day my mom talked to my second grade teacher, gave me a couple of pictures from the hospital, and we went in and we spoke to my class about it. I talked in detail about my sister's scar and how she had surgery when she was a baby. But my mom was really the one that spearheaded that. She was the one that said, it's better to explain the information to them. And she really wanted to quell the questioning a bit from my friends, but she also wanted to advocate for CHD at the same time. So it was my mom who was able to kind of defend both of her daughters at the same time in that situation. So she is the one that taught me.
That is just so wonderful. And I can just picture the two of you doing it. I hope you have some photos from that time. But if you don't, clearly it's imprinted in your head. I mean, it sounds like an event that you'll never forget.
Absolutely. It is unforgettable. It's one of the first times that I remember standing in front of a large group and being asked questions. It was not as nerve-wracking as you would think. My mom was there with me. So I remember my mom standing there with me and helping me answer any questions. I know that my teacher was proud of me for standing in front of the class and wanting to explain things about my sister. I think that was a really healthy and positive way to answer my classmates' concerns. I know from that point on, it was just a lot easier for me to address the question.
It sounds like overnight you became an advocate for the CHD community, and it was a very natural thing for you to do. Do you still take part in CHD activities today?
Oh, yes. I think that kind of at the behest of my mom and my sister, I started getting more into CHD advocacy. Obviously, at a very grassroots level, I'll always be taking part in what I consider an informal education, just speaking up when I hear fictional information being tossed around or answering questions if I'm in a discussion with other parents or if I'm in a discussion with other people about congenital heart defects. Many people don't realize how common it is. So I think that's where my advocacy for CHD starts, is just by correcting that false information or talking about my own experiences. In a more formal sense, I advocate in the form of fundraisers. My sister is part of planning a fundraiser that is annually held in Philadelphia. It's called Keep the Beat. The fundraiser benefits the Children's Heart Foundation. My sister, Megan, and her friend, Melissa Teresi, are the co-founders of this. And my sister is still important and strategic in the planning of this event every year. They kind of take it to new heights every year and make more money for the foundation. So I participate in that event and I attend and donate, and it's a lot of fun. And it's just a great part of advocacy that's also educating people.
Oh, I love it. When I was the vice president of the Texas Children's Heart Foundation chapter, I went to their annual event, and we were always impressed with the Philadelphia ladies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are impressive.
They're very dynamic, and they've really done a fabulous job of getting the entire community. I mean, I think they had mm-hmm. some things that they auctioned off at one point from the Philadelphia Eagles, and they had mm-hmm. a lot of support. So I'm happy to hear that you were part of that as well. That's fabulous. Tonight Forever by the Baby Blue Sound Collective. I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever. Christy, before the break, we were talking about what it was like for you in elementary school. And of course, that was quite a while ago now. I'd like this segment for us to talk about your pregnancy. What was it like for you when you first got pregnant?
My first pregnancy was nerve-wracking. I think that it's nerve-wracking for a lot of people.
Yes.
Just normally, you know, your first time being pregnant, you're nervous about everything. Generally, it was a normal pregnancy. I had a really healthy, normal pregnancy. Up until 33 weeks, quite honestly, I was just scared that I would have a baby with a heart defect, specifically hypoplastic right heart syndrome, because that's what my sister was born with. All of those negative memories or comments made by my parents at that time kept coming up in conversations, but all of my tests came back normal. So I was constantly reassured by all the doctors and a genetic counselor that my likelihood of having a child with a heart defect was no more increased than anybody else in the general population. That the fact that my sister had a CHD really would not impact my child. Other than that, my first pregnancy was great. And then at 33 weeks, I went in for my normal biweekly checkup with my doctor, and the doctor put the Doppler onto my stomach as they normally do. And we heard my daughter's heartbeat, and it was incredibly fast. And even me, with an untrained ear, knew that was way too fast for what it had sounded like in past weeks. So my doctor sent us to the hospital as a precaution to be checked out. I didn't know this at the time, and I found out later that as soon as I left the office building, my doctor had called his partner in his practice that was over at labor and delivery at the time mm-hmm. and scheduled me for an emergency C-section, because he knew, even by hearing that heartbeat, that something really bad was happening. He didn't know exactly what was happening at that point, but I found out later that he had already called the hospital to schedule a C-section. And when I showed up, they did not tell me that yet because they did not want to worry me. I was able to see another genetic counselor when I got there and a fetal cardiologist who let me know that my daughter had an atrial flutter.
Wow. So your doctor already was way ahead of you. He had already planned the C-section for you. So did you deliver the baby early?
I did. I wound up delivering Cameron at 33 weeks that very next day. So by the time I left the doctor's office building to the hospital, there was only a 3-hour difference, basically just enough time to arrive at the hospital, get put onto a heart monitor, speak to a couple experts in the cardiology field who identified pretty easily, actually, through ultrasound that it was an atrial flutter. I was really angry when I found this out because I had been constantly reassured throughout my pregnancy that my child did not have a heart defect. And that was always my first question. You know, after every Doppler, after every ultrasound, you know, the heart looks okay. And I was always told, yeah, everything's normal. And then to come in at 33 weeks, kind of in the home stretch, and be told, your daughter's not okay. She has an atrial flutter. I was angry. I was really, really upset. And they explained it to me that the atrial flutter could have shown up at any time. It could have just popped up at some point in my 32nd week of pregnancy or in my 31st week of pregnancy. But the important thing was that they were able to identify it, and now they were able to work out a treatment solution. They kind of toyed around with giving me medication and seeing if that would have an effect on the baby, but her heartbeat was so fast. The heart rate was well into the upper 200s that they really opted for getting her out. They said it would just be easier to treat her while she was outside of me, better than inside. So that's why I had the emergency C-section. And she was born on St. Patrick's Day, actually. So she is an Irish baby born on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's kind of perfect, isn't it?
It did work out. At the time, I didn't appreciate the irony of that situation. But now that she's heart healthy and turning 8 years old, it's really nice that she has a birthday on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh my goodness. So she's 8 years old. Good. We can all breathe a sigh of relief. Okay. It doesn't turn out okay. But what did they attribute that atrial flutter to?
So they could not tell me, even to this day, what would have caused the atrial flutter. Basically, what I was told is that it's not genetic. Atrial flutters happen in families where they've never seen atrial flutters. It's not necessarily connected to my sister's CHD, and my husband doesn't have any CHD in his family. So they said it honestly just kind of comes out of nowhere. It usually resolves itself with medication. They told me that there was no way, even with a fetal echocardiogram, to have detected it, because it's one thing that if it's not there at 31 weeks and I have a fetal echocardiogram at 31 weeks, they won't be able to tell, but then it could show up at 32 weeks. So with my pregnancies after Cameron, I did have multiple fetal echocardiograms to specifically look for atrial flutters.
Now, is that life-threatening? Is that why they felt they had to take her right away? Because I went into labor early with my second child, and they told me, oh no, he's better off inside of you for as long as possible. And I went home and was on bed rest for 2 weeks so we could make it to 36 weeks, because for my doctor, 36 weeks was magical because the lungs were better formed. Weren't they a little bit worried taking her early like that, that maybe the lungs wouldn't be formed or that there might be some other problem with delivering her so early?
Yes, they openly discussed with me the options of either keeping her in and giving me medication. The problem with that is they didn't have enough time to allow the medication to get through my system and properly assess if her heart rate was going down fast enough. With her heart rate as high as it was, it did become life-threatening, because they spoke about how the quick heart rate, at least in the upper 200s, would weaken the heart muscles. And that would have a lasting effect on her after birth. And they didn't want to risk that. Normally, an atrial flutter is not life-threatening, but because they didn't know how long she had it for at that point in time, they knew it could have been anywhere from 2 weeks to just a couple hours, because my last Doppler was done 2 weeks before that. They didn't want her to go into cardiac arrest. They wanted to get her out and be able to give her the medicine directly instead of waiting the time for it to go through my system and then get to her.
Right, right. All of that makes perfect sense. So I'm assuming, since she's 8 years old now, that her lungs were okay, and that even though they delivered her early, that she still didn't suffer from massive problems.
No, they were able to give her steroids, which helped her lung development, other than waiting for that feeding instinct to come in. We didn't have any major issues when she was in the NICU. Obviously, the doctors told me about how the instinct for feeding and suckling really doesn't come in until your 34th through 35th week. So she did struggle with feeding for a while there. She was on a feeding tube. Once she hit that 34, 35 week mark, which means she was actually 2 weeks old at that point, because she was outside, she did really well. She doesn't have any lung issues or breathing issues today. She's definitely above average on the growth charts. So feeding is not an issue.
Oh, well, good. Good. That's great. Well, my last question for you is, what advice would you give to future heart moms? Now you're not just a heart sister, you're a heart mom too. Even though, luckily, it sounds like everything with her has completely resolved, which I absolutely love. Is there anything particular that your mom did which you feel was especially insightful, having grown up with a heart warrior sister and being heart healthy yourself?
Yes, I think that both as a sibling and a heart mom, which is funny because I don't even consider myself a heart mom. I know that sounds silly, but just considering how benign my daughter's heart defect was compared to my sister's, it's funny when people call me a heart mom. I don't even think of it that way. I think that I learned just having to strike that balance between listening to medical professionals, but also go with your gut. And it's a weird balance to strike. And it's different with every family. It's different with every mom. But I saw my mom kind of struggle with wanting to speak up for herself and what she felt was better versus listening to the experts. I don't think you'll ever regret speaking up on behalf of your child. So that one piece of advice I think you kind of have to live by when you have a child with CHD. I also think that one thing I've noticed more in general in motherhood and in women lately is the ability to take care of oneself. And I didn't see that from my mom. I think this is something I learned from my mom, but in reverse. I don't remember her ever taking care of herself. I just don't have any memories of it. And I think that she was really run ragged during this time.
Sure.
We're entering a new time with motherhood now, and it's a lot different than back in 1986. And I feel like women are so much more supportive of each other, and we're so much more aware of medically fragile children. I just think you need to take time for yourself, be able to lean on other moms and other parents and not feel guilty about that. Just take some time out and know that your child is not going to resent you in any way for taking care of yourself. One of my favorite quotes is that you can't pour from an empty cup. And I think my mom tried to do that a lot. She taught me that you will be a better caregiver and a better mom if you are in a good mental state and if you are in a healthy part of your own life. You've taken care of yourself and therefore you can take care of other people.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Christy.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
This was a lot of fun. And that does conclude this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today, friends. Please come back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern Time or any time. That's the great thing about the podcast. You can listen to it when it's convenient for you. Until then, please follow our show, Heart to Heart with Anna, on YouTube. You can find my show by looking under my name, Anna Jaworski. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
This program is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.hug-podcastnetwork.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more. Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host Anna Jaworski, can be heard every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time.